Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bull to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million. If I had
hello and welcome back to Snacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Allies, Mr. Matt Weber, the board. SP Features up 2. Isaiah Features up 21 after yesterday's big rally. We have a bounce back over in Asia. Of course, the sell-off yesterday didn't do any... Didn't carry over, so the bounce back just kind of gets them back to somewhat even. Brennan, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Chief. How are you doing?
So far, so good. The beautiful morning.
You survived the big tornado the other night?
Yeah, I did. I talked to some people last night that were somewhat close, and Maddie and I were talking on the way in. Is anything, if you don't think life is fair, all you gotta do is be near a tornado, or somebody's house is absolutely leveled and the guy next door is just fine.
Yep.
You know, it's an amazing
every
thing.
Every time I hear of a story like that, I go back to the big tornado that hit the southwest side in 1967.
I'm just going to bring that up.
And you're within a couple blocks of my house.
Where were you living at the time?
I was living at 88th and Racine, and the house hit. The tornado hit at 87th and Racine. So I was playing baseball at Brainerd Park. And rode my bike home while the tornado was hitting. It was just a loud. It was like a huge freight train all around me.
See, I didn't. You learn something every morning. I remember that tornado fairly vividly. I was under the impression, for those of you that don't know, Chicago may seem like it's very, very flat, but actually the highest point is right where pretty much where Beverly Country Club sits, right? 88th and Western.
Ryan's Woods.
88th and Western. And I thought that once the thing smacked into the Beverly Country Club and took out, what, the dining room or the ballroom and left the rest of the place okay, so it like clunked half the country club. I thought that was the highest point, and it never touched down after that. You're saying it did. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, east of there around 87th and Racine. It came almost directly east on the north side of 87th Street, 86th to 87th Street, down to about Vincennes.
All right. Why did I think there was no damage there? I thought once it clipped 87th, it was still visible, but never caused any damage after that. So I'm mistaken again.
Mm-hmm.
When it started,
Daddy, write this date down. Chief was mistaken.
Because I know it hit. Where did it start? It took out the rug place outside of Oaklawn High School.
Well, it hit Oaklawn High School. It hit Oaklawn High School and the Red Barn. Was it the Red Barn restaurant?
Yeah.
That old fast food hamburger place right across the street from Oaklawn High School.
Well, the place on the southeast...
That was the worst damage.
The place on the southeast corner was a rug place, and it was absolutely leveled.
I remember that.
It was absolutely leveled.
Mm-hmm.
So on that, it essentially went down, what, Southwest Highway to 87th over to Beverly Country Club, right?
Yep.
We ended up living at 89th in Francisco, or 90th in Francisco, and if There were no houses quite right there, and we lived further south at the time. And if we'd have been there, we would have nailed the house we ended up living in. It was right, came right over there on its way to Beverly. It knocked out a bazillion trees in Evergreen Country Club, I thought too, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. It just had a kind of a weird. They all come from the southwest heading northeast, right? Isn't that what all tornadoes do?
Mm-hmm.
And
they do, and they bounce. They bounce, which explains in part why one house can be leveled and the house next door not even touched.
Yeah, I was we went skiing, and my brother was this a long time ago. So my brother was doing a seminar, PTI seminar, someplace. So he went out and did the seminar, and he met us. We were going to Steamboat. Out of all the places you want to This was in like February, maybe March. And so we're driving across. My nephews, of course, were late. Imagine that, Brendan. So we were going to stay over somewhere, and of course we didn't. We ended up being in a rest stop. With them sleeping and me half hour, couldn't sleep anyway. I just drove the whole way. Another story. You know how, what happens when you hang around your nephews, right?
Yep.
So, of course, we're in Nebraska, which is normally the home, Nebraska and Oklahoma, the home of tornadoes. Well, Kansas, as in the movie. All that stuff has shifted south, though. I mean, I don't know if I want to blame global warming, but more tornadoes are in, like, Alabama and Georgia now than are in the Kansas and Oklahoma, which is total change from what history used to be here. Anyway, so we're going along, and you could just see this. The sky was the weirdest thing I've ever seen, Brent. You could see, if you looked up, little spots where, like, a little, you'd see some stuff starting to twist, and then it would kind of go back up and want to come down a little. And they had, in front of us, an hour ahead of us, they had what exactly is a microburst? It wasn't, I don't think it was a tornado.
It's a small tornado, smaller in size, and just kind of pops up out of nowhere and is over pretty quickly.
Well,
it's much more powerful than a long-lasting tornado.
Well, it blew all these 18-wheelers, how's that for the right term? No, you're not just supposed to say trucks, or 18-wheelers. They were all, just like an hour ahead of us, they were all in the ditch. Like, it just blew. Everybody was driving in this one section, like 1 mile of I-80. Everybody ended up in the ditch, and I'm thinking, it's a good thing my two knucklehead nephews were later. That could have been me. So the best is they've got this AM radio station out there, right? So everybody's calling in to say what's going on in their hood, and they got all these guys, just calling in, they're kind of weirdo ducks. So one guy calls and he goes, "Man, I'm seeing this little funnel cloud come out and go back up." And the lady goes, "Well, where are you?" "Well, I'm in my truck." And she goes, "Where's your truck?" Like, you idiot. Oh, yeah. But they're giving milepost numbers, and Route 30, I'm seeing a funnel cloud in this place on milepost 12 and this road. It was pretty interesting. And then you'd go like 50 miles and the station would flip to the next town station with the same people on it. It was,
mm-hmm.
But I'm sitting there going, "Man, these poor guys in their trucks just lying in the ditch." I mean, they were all like just in the ditch laying on their side. I mean, it was the weirdest thing. There had been no accident. They were just there. And
mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there, well, let's see, anything where
tornadoes can be pretty powerful things.
Well, anybody, but they weren't wrecked, Brendan. They weren't like a house that was torn apart. They were just in the ditch on their side.
They weren't big enough. I mean, a house is, and actually, because they were so mobile, that helped them not get destroyed the way a house would.
Well, a house, I mean, as you, if you're a trucker, so what, your livelihood is gone, your house is gone. It doesn't get any worse. You know, if you're in one of those big sleeper cabs where you live in the darn thing. But, no, I'm just glad there was only, I don't think there were any deaths, were there?
I didn't see any deaths, any news reports of any deaths, which is a very good thing. There was a couple people that I heard were in critical condition when the house collapsed because of the tornadoes, but I don't think anybody died.
Well, the lady downstairs, she's terrific. She tends bar one night in this bar in our building, but she's a vet tech. So she works in the emergency vets like three nights a week. He just does this one night a week. Anyway, more than anybody needs to know. But she lives out there, and she said, "I'm listening to this stuff, and it says, you know, go find shelter. You're getting alarms on your phone." And I'm thinking, maybe I should take the kids down to the basement. She said, then I kind of heard something off of the distance, and then it kind of quieted down. I said, you know, there's a decision you might want to make a little quicker next time. It's not one you can ponder for an hour, like, hey, the thing's coming right at you. Hey, maybe we should think about going down to the basement. But there was another lady this morning, just before Maddie hopped in, said that she took the kids down to the basement, and she was there like 5 seconds before the house disappeared. She just got downstairs. I mean, it was like, strange stuff. But no, it's
that is.
Anyway, so what do you make of what's going on since last Tuesday with the market, with every central bank like piling in, saying like they're doing stuff, and the manipulation here, I've never seen anything like it, Brent. This has been my theme for 20 years. I've been on radio, and I keep saying that these people are doing this. I've never seen it like this in the last week with the Chinese deciding commodities were too high, so they're selling commodities on the same day that the interest rates are going. I mean, it's crazy stuff. It's just crazy stuff. I mean, are these guys going to do this forever, or is there going to be a day when everybody gets their comeuppance, or is it just going to keep going? More money? I mean, I'm beginning to think it might last a lot longer. Doesn't seem to be any economic price to be paid here, at least not now, or not today.
I don't know what to tell you about that. I mean, I think that it is going to be a very unusual time because there are too many things going on in the world right now that are in conflict, and which takes priority for punishing the Chinese for market manipulation, or, you know, Iran for or North Korea for nuclear arms. I mean, there are so many things that where do you put your energy to try to resolve some of the problems? Well, in other words, can they get away? How long can they get away with it? Because there are other more pressing items that are a higher priority.
Well, this China situation reminds me. I mean, it's a slice of history that to me would be so similar. What would we have done if Hitler didn't invade Poland? Would we have just gleefully done business with the guy forever and made him stronger and stronger? I mean,
we would have. In fact, there was a delay. That, remember, Hitler invaded Poland on September 1st of 1939. He got the rest of Europe around 9 months, 10 months later. It was in the early spring of 1940 when he got through France and Belgium and the Low Countries. Then he started the Blitzkrieg of Britain. And, of course, the British were the appeasement leaders at the time of Hitler. So it would have continued much the same way without other circumstances, and bad decisions on the part of Hitler and his generals.
As history's going on, Brendan, it's easy to say the appeasement leaders. I mean, it's real easy to say, but when at the same time, but by the way, I'm not saying because it's easy to say it's wrong. I'm just saying it's easy to say, but at the same time, they were appeasing, meaning Chamberlain. Roosevelt was absolutely convinced that there was no way out, yet it wasn't time politically here for us to do anything. I mean, so he did a bunch of crap like Lend-Lease and things like that, but can anybody imagine, I mean, if you go back and look at the history, I've tried to see some of it, where's Lou when we need him, I guess, but I can't imagine Chamberlain walking off that plane and said, I told this guy to pound sand, we're starting to fight tomorrow. I mean, England wasn't ready for that, I don't think, at the time.
Right. Neither was the United States.
No.
Britain, in fact, at that time, the strongest army in Europe was France.
And they
were completely overrun in a matter of a few days.
Yeah, they lasted about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And they had more soldiers and more tanks. They didn't have as much leadership, though. I wouldn't say. They had, like, a little bit of that.
Good guess.
I'm a little bit, I don't know, halfway amazed. I'm changing the subject here just a little bit, Brendan, but it's actually somewhat the same subject. I'm a little amazed and seriously appalled by the way, I won't say the media, because it's somebody, I think somebody's behind it. I don't know who somebody is. Maddie and I were talking about this on the way, and how this whole concept, I was at my nephew's birthday party yesterday, and of course one of my nephews is reasonably opinionated. Imagine that. And then everybody is, you can't have a conversation with anybody now, Brendan, where it was four or five people, where somebody doesn't mouth out something about, well, they can't get workers and nobody wants to work. And I, from us doing the history of this whole thing and the extra unemployment and this and that, and how people are getting paid to retain employees, and they took those checks, and I don't know if half of them paid the people. You know, I don't know how that, somehow that worked, because I was looking, even at some religious groups, I won't say groups, some of them are church of what's happening now, which is not a slam, it's just not traditional religions, got all this money, and 2 months later, they got nobody employed there. And I went through a lot of the list of, one of the listeners was nice enough to send me, you can actually go online and find the people in Chicago, or in Illinois, that got the first PPP. And there's, you know, thousands and thousands of places that got over $10,000 to essentially retain employees. And yet, a lot of them didn't have anywhere near as many employees after they got it than before, right? So, I mean, I don't think people... So, even American Airlines yesterday, how much... I mean, what do you think the total tab has been for American Airlines, money they got from the government, where, the chairman, I don't think, ever missed a massive paycheck, and all of a sudden, to go back to, three-quarters of a schedule, they're short people. Well, didn't they just get money from everybody else to pay all these people? I mean,
That was the big push for them a few months ago, that they needed that in order to stay in business, and they got it.
But if you want to be the most unpopular person at the dinner table, which unfortunately once in a while I am, I'll say so. We have declared the people at this table have declared that because you need it, people have an obligation to go to work to somebody for $10 an hour. And they look at you like you got.
It's not a simple question. I don't believe the argument that it's so hard to find people to do jobs, especially menial labor jobs, is solely because of the government largesse with the extra unemployment salaries. I think there's a lot of other things at work, not the least of which is the fact that why should I bust my hump in a restaurant busting tables for $3 an hour plus tips, which still comes out to, maybe $10 an hour, when I can wait a little bit longer with the economy growing, maybe get a better job in a safer environment. I don't think that the problem is going to be resolved when the states stop giving out that extra $300 a week in unemployment benefits. I think there are many more factors here, plus the fact that a lot of industries are retooling, coming in with different types of modernization and mechanization that is going to supplement the place of some of those workers as well. It's not just a simple fix. It's a very complex question and not a simple answer.
Except we love to drop the simple reason on top of people to manipulate people's thinking to our... There was an article I read, actually one of the listeners sent me. Thank you, by the way. I learned a lot from this stuff, and it was a lady in Iowa. Iowa, Maddie. Just saying. With Maddie's from Iowa. We used to have a trader that worked for me, and when somebody said something really out there, he'd say, "What are you, from Iowa?" Just saying, man. Anyway, so this lady says she's 50-ish, says she's worked her entire life either in marketing or distribution or something, never earned less than $60,000-$65,000 a year. Her place goes under because of the COVID, and now she's out of a job, and she's getting the extra $300 a week, she says, which absolutely does not come close to what her salary was, and she's looking for a job, and says that everybody looks at her like, she's one of the people sitting there with a beer, in the wife beater T-shirt, watching a football game during the day instead of getting a job. She goes, and the pressure is for her to go work at Menards for $10 an hour. She goes, why should I do that? I'm looking for a job. I mean, and this is what I do for a living. I don't work at Menards. It may come to that, but
I'm not going to be a greeter at Walmart.
Yeah, she goes, it may come to that, but why? I mean, nobody gets a job in my industry where I might have to move, may have to relocate. You don't get that in a week. I mean, and yet the amount of I won't say abuse, but the amount that everybody, that all of a sudden you owe, these people owe you. If you're $100,000 a year, whatever, tax guy, you owe somebody to go there and deliver pizzas because they want their pizza for $10. I mean, if you're not working,
I know.
I mean, it's really crazed. I mean, how easily are we turned with the new communication system? Why would anybody?
Well, the other part of that is that if you're out of work, if you're the $100,000 employee who lost your career job, you should go to start delivering pizzas and you should bus tables because those guys want to make a living operating their restaurant or their pizza joint.
Right. And it's stunning to me that, it's kind of a harsh statement, as Milton Friedman said many times when I had him for class, there's no such thing as a shortage, it's just too low of a price.
That's right.
Which is a little, I don't know if I buy that the whole way, but I mean,
but there's some truth. There's a lot of truth in that.
Well, the lady, I mean, we're pretty friendly. And waitress says, well, if everybody has to make, $15 in the restaurant industry, these guys can't run these restaurants. And I said, to be honest with you, that's BS. I said, that's when you renegotiate the lease. I mean, everybody else has got their budget based on this group making $10, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, this group doesn't want to work for $10 or can't work for $10 because all of a sudden, you know, the toll getting here from Hammond has gone up $4 a day, which it did. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff happening. You know, why should it just so everybody has to adjust? Now the city has decided they're not adjusting. Property taxes are going up, not down, right? So they're saying, well, this is all fine and dandy that everybody's hurting, but we're not going to be the one that hurts. And I'm sure the lessors are saying, hey, you signed that lease 2 years ago. I'm not cutting back. And the guy's selling you your chicken wings, they're not cutting back. So the only guy we're bitching at is the guy who's making $10 an hour.
You're making $10 an hour.
Yeah, you deserve. Go ahead.
Before we get too far along on this, because this happened to take the rest of the show, but how about that NCAA report decision yesterday by the Supreme Court?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Brennan, was to take a shot at lawyers and judges. That sometimes, I looked at the decision. It seems pretty narrow. What it basically says is...
It is pretty narrow.
That the NCAA can't regulate how much people make in other jobs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that to me, if you know, of course I'll never be on a Supreme Court, but if I was, I think I'd have to say to the other eight people, no, wait a minute. what you're missing here, and by the way, legally, I think they're absolutely right. but the way... I don't see how you can poke this one out there. It's like if your entire roof is leaking, how do you start go crazy over one hole? You know, I mean, where I'm going with this, and I'm being very clumsy, is you have this whole method in NCAA football where they're supposedly not paying people and they're supposedly not having people getting paid on the side, and one of the abuses was that the alumni. Okay, you can't pay this kid, but I can take, you know, Matty Weber's kid who just happens to play quarterback, and I can put him in my law firm, and I don't really care if he shows up, and I'll pay him $20,000 for the summer for a quote summer work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then the somebody somewhere the NCAA says, well, wait a minute, that's the same as just paying the kid for playing quarterback. You can't do that, right? Especially if you're considered a booster. I mean, you could probably pay a kid from Notre Dame to do that. I can't, even though I've never given him any dough, but because I'm considered a booster if I'm an alumnus, which I'm not really, but well, I am an alumnus. So they've got these kind of little rules that if you think about them on their own, obviously are anti-competitive. It shouldn't be anybody's business with somebody, would you pay somebody or would I pay somebody, except it's all tied together with the fact that the kid plays quarterback at a school I want him to play for. So it really is.
Well,
so
the other thing is that if he was a clarinet player in the band, the similar rules don't apply. So if the kid is a computer data expert, they can get jobs in their area, but you can't do things like that for athletes. It is a very narrow decision, and one of the things about the Supreme Court and the judicial system is, depending on the case, depending on the facts, the judges can limit it very narrowly, or they can extend it very broadly. And you saw in the era of civil rights, for example, the expansion under some of the previous courts, they expanded civil rights and judicial activism, as it was termed. This was an example of a very narrow focus on what was brought up from the lower courts. The exception is that Kavanaugh wrote a scathing opinion on the antitrust area of this case yesterday, which is setting the stage for the next case and the case after that to come up, which could broaden it. I see this as the Supreme Court telling the NCAA, here's your chance to save face, and you guys make the decision to change the rules to allow some of these things to happen. Because if you don't, the next time we get a case, we're going to hammer you.
Well, I don't... When was the last time somebody paid the fiddler in the school band over market price just so he could fiddle in the school's band? It never happened.
No, you're missing the point. The fact is that they can get other jobs, whether they're paid a dollar extra or $1 million extra. That's not the point. The fact is that the athletes are, at least on paper, treated differently. And that the Supreme Court is saying that the schools have to start paying them other things in addition to just room and board. which has been the basis of their argument for amateurism. And it's really hard, in my mind, to argue the amateurism of NCAA athletes when you've got a coach getting $11 million and you've got other people making $4 or $5 million, when the real product that is being watched are the kids playing football who are on the offensive and defensive line and the quarterback and the wide receivers and the defensive ends who are coming in to make the tackles, or the guy who's making a tremendous dunk, the Zion Williamson. Those are who people come to see, and they're not making the money off of it.
Well, I think that's true. I think that the whole system is pretty messed up. But it starts with, I don't know how you fix something like this, Brendan, because my German buddy, he's from Germany and he's a friend of mine. I said to him, well, what is the universities in Germany have soccer teams? Obviously, that's a big sport in Germany. He goes, no, what? Because they do, but they're like club sports. He goes, why would a school have be any part of like the professional soccer system? He's only in America do you tie universities together with professional sports, basically.
That's not true for all sports. It's primarily true for football and basketball.
Well, it's true for anyone.
It is a bit of a feeder system for baseball, example, but you don't see it for fencing or other sports.
Well, but I would say that it all has to do with money. If all of a sudden one day it's going to sound terrible, but all the 5'9" white guys in the world decide that lacrosse is their game, and there's 80,000 people there, $20 or $100 a ticket, they'll find a way to make that a professional sport at Notre Dame or Northwestern or Illinois.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. The reason why it's football and basketball is just because that's what people want to see, right? But I mean, in Germany, if you're 16 years old, you go to a club where you're actually paid.
You go to the club league, hockey in Canada. Yeah. Look at all the junior leagues in Canada for hockey.
And they all get paid.
They're not going to a high school or a college team. They send kids away at 12, 14 years old to go into the junior hockey system.
Hey, but by the way, one quick question for you two sports mavens. At what age in Canada do they start getting paid? When do the parents stop paying for the coaching at these junior places and they actually start getting paid? I have no idea. Do you?
I don't know.
Maybe you have a clue?
I don't. I'm sure I can look it up.
I've never even had that one. Anyway, Brendan, we'll be able to talk about that next Monday, buddy, or next Tuesday. You take care of yourself. SP Futures up 6.
Okay.
NASDAQ Futures up 40. We'll be back with Mr. Joel on Cannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm somehow Mr. Brent Weber on the board. Manny, you gotta start playing less commercials because I look up stuff on here. All it does is get me aggravated during the break.
By the way, speaking of getting aggravated, I was looking up into the junior hockey stuff in Canada, and it appears that they start getting paid at age 16 through age 20, and then by then you either make a big league team or you kind of stop playing hockey.
So you can't play junior hockey when you're 24.
I mean, I don't know if you can or can't, but that's sort of what I read. I guess back in 2014, though, there was a huge lawsuit because they were finding that they were paying these kids like $35 a week. And they're basically working 7 days a week. So now they're making at least minimum wage.
Well, what do the minor league teams, once you get your bonus, if you and I just go and try out for the single A Cubs in South Bend, and we don't get a bonus, what do we make? I don't think we make very much.
Not much.
I don't know if it's minimum, depending bus rides and everything else. I'm not so sure it's much more than minimum wage. If it is, just saying. Anyway, yeah. S&P futures up 550 now, and NASDAQ futures up 38. Dow futures up 20. So we're moderately positive, even after a huge up day yesterday. Over in Europe, same sort of thing, moderately positive, although maybe not quite as positive as we are. DAX up 12, that's 0.1%. FTSE up 26.4%. CAC around up 10.2%. Over in Asia, Nikkei's up 873, 3%. Oh, they were down 4 yesterday, so they're kind of right back to where they were. Shanghai up 28, that's 0.8%. Hang Seng, of course, one of these things has got to go the opposite way every day. So they're down 179.6%. This is a way of review. Yesterday, Dow up 586. This is after Dow getting trounced the last 4 days last week. But they're up 586. It's almost 2% yesterday. S&P up 58, 1.4%. NASDAQ was up on 0.8%. Bonds were at 1.49, so we're inching back to that 1.5 number. This is right about where the auction was 2 weeks ago, so we really haven't moved. The Bund, minus 0.17, again, creeping up a little bit. Japan, again, creeping up because they made it down to 0.03, now they're up to 0.05, big deal, but at least they've stopped going down. Oil, down 51 cents, 73.15. Brent, down 50 cents, 74.40. I think we're in the new month there, we're in September on the oil. Natural gas up 3 cents, 3.22. RBOB unchanged at 2.18. We've got gold up $1.40, 17.84. Gold a little bit of a bounce yesterday, but nowhere near the 1890 or so highs it was making a couple weeks ago. Silver up a whole penny, 26.04. Copper at 4.18. I mean, if you're a conspiracy theorist, central banks are manipulating metals just as they are everything else. I mean, once you're in for a penny, in for a pound, right? Maybe isn't that the old crypto?
Right.
Down 1,100 bucks on the Bitcoin, 31,378. Guys were telling me last night they were trading that, what's it, Dogecoin? Is that the one that Elon Musk was talking about when he was on Saturday Night Live?
Yep.
It topped out at 70 and now it's like 17. That seems like a drop. Just saying. What exactly is Dogecoin? Do you have any idea? Just another one of these?
Just another blockchain crypto.
Yeah. All right. Well, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had a fatal crash that happened on the Dan Ryan Express lanes earlier this morning, and that has the outbound side of the express lanes at 31st closed for that accident investigation. So traffic is forced into the locals at 59th Street. So keep that in mind on the Ryan. Looks like we have a crash on I-294 as well. The Tri-State northbound before Kedzie, the crash is blocking the left lane. So expect some delays on the Tri-State northbound side as you navigate around that crash. No issues coming in on the Stevenson. Traffic building steadily, but no accidents. Same for the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy are looking good. Everything else quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be an absolutely beautiful weather day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 75. Right now it's crystal clear and 56 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 107 today. Right now it's clear and 87. In sports, Cubs were shut out last night at Wrigley, falling to the Cleveland Indians 4-0. Javier Baez was benched in the game for forgetting how many outs there were, and he was doubled up on a pop fly to the outfield. White Sox were off last night. They're back in action tonight in Pittsburgh to take on the Pirates. That's a 6:05 first pitch. Diamondbacks beat the Brewers 5-1, snapping their 17-game losing streak. They actually helped the Cubs out, too. NBA basketball, Suns, game two of the Western Conference Finals tonight as they'll take on the Clippers. Suns lead 1-0. Still without Chris Paul, though. Certainly their MVP, could have been the league's MVP, I think he finished second in MVP voting, is still in COVID protocol after testing positive on June 16th. Chief.
Does he have it?
Well, he's been vaccinated, and they say he has no symptoms, but he's still isolated, and he's out indefinitely. That's the latest.
He picked up a germ from somebody else in his nose.
And he has to have two back-to-back negative PCR tests 24 hours apart before he can return.
Whatever. We won't go into that. Joel, take us away from the COVID stuff, because if you've had COVID and you're no danger to anybody, it's probably still going to be in your system for a while. Why do we... Never mind. So what's up? I don't see Michigan at the Baseball World Series. I didn't see him at the football
playoffs. They got out early, Chief. Yep. Michigan got knocked out early. How about Notre Dame? Are they still hanging in there?
No. They lost to
Mississippi State.
Mississippi State, and they gave away the first game. They were up 4 runs. In the second game, they won big. In the third game, they lost big. So they were they made it to the Super Regional, maybe?
If they won the last game, they'd have made it to Omaha. Yep. Omaha, one game short.
Omaha double elimination or triple? I think it's double.
Actually, don't know.
I mean, you get to come out of the loser's column at least with one loss. It's not one and out. It's not like a NCAA tournament basketball. There is a loser's bracket. It takes like all week to do it.
I would love to go out to the College World Series sometime out there, though.
This year, maybe. Allegedly, it's the hottest place on earth.
Well, it's hot and humid for sure in Omaha in the summer. There's no doubt about that. But it would be fun if you had a team, a dog in the fight to go out there for a few days. That'd be a lot of fun.
If I had a seat in the shade, I'd watch. I don't care who the teams were. I mean, college baseball is good. Some of the regionals, and I've been to the Crestwood team. They have that fake infield. How good is that? How do you slide on that?
You mean the dirt's fake?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. There's no tarp.
I don't know. I've never played on that.
I mean, it seems like the ball, the infield's fake too. So it's it seems like the ground balls and everything maybe are a little faster than on dirt, but they bounce pretty true and guys slide and do them. It's kind of weird, but it looks like infield. It looks like a dark infield. Like it looks like an infield after they use the hose on it.
Yeah.
But those guys don't have any. There's nobody rolling a tarp out there if it's raining or anything like that. I think a lot of the colleges are into that. Boy, somebody's high schools around here. Are you doing the same? Are you doing the same thing up there? The amount of money being spent on these artificial surface fields. I went by tells the 107th and Central. I'll think of the name of the high school. Richards. They got the amount of equipment out there and the big huge sewer things and everything we're putting in this. It's this massive undertaking to put a football field in for these high schools. It's like they're doing it at Soldier Field, for God's sake. Anyway, so Joel, what do you make of what's been happening in the the market. And by the way, did you see last Thursday? I mean, I don't know why you look at this nasty stuff. We blew through $8 trillion on the Fed balance sheet. Last week, the Fed added 48 and 64, $112 billion to their balance sheet in 1 week. And we wonder why the market's doing what it's doing. I mean, is there no limit? Is there no shame for these guys ever? Where are we going to go? 80?
I was just going to say, I don't know if I know less about high school baseball fields than what the Fed's doing.
I think you know more about what the Fed's doing. Well, the Chinese came out there, and I hope you weren't long corner or anything when the Chinese decided they were going to sell all these commodities out of their inventory because the prices were getting too high. I mean, you wouldn't expect that if you were a trader on the Board of Trade, that you're trading against the Chinese government. But you are, evidently.
That and in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, they don't like Bitcoin either.
Well, we got transitory inflation, Chief, right? It's just here and it's going to be gone. But investors should have a heads up today. Jerome Powell is speaking, and he did put out what he was going to say, but I think with the effect that the Fed action last week and then what Bullard said definitely had an impact on the market. But here we are. We're right back up, Chief, right back up at all-time highs. So really interesting trading action the last 2 days.
Well, can anybody, you maybe, because you're an experienced market sage, can anybody, since May 26th, which is roughly 1 month ago, by most people, if you listen to the talking heads, I won't say anything bad, on TV, the world has become a spectacular place economically. Everything is doing fine. The only thing we have, it's a Guinness, is we don't have a bunch of people willing to work for $10 an hour. If we just had that, the world would be our oyster. And yet, the Fed in 1 month has poured $164 billion into the market. If it's all that good, why do they have to do that? Can you give me any reason?
No, I can't, Chief. No, I can't.
Now, does that mean they know something we don't, or it's just so good they're just doing it anyway?
They're just doing the best job they can under the circumstances. You have to keep in mind we did come out of a rare situation in 2020, and they're just going to try and steer the boat in the smoothest waters possible. And right now they're doing a good job.
You don't really believe that, do you? Was your tongue in your cheek? Just saying.
Under the circumstances, Chief. Under the circumstances.
What do you think of that Supreme Court ruling yesterday about the you can't regulate how much people get paid in the summertime? Yeah, the one.
Man.
You think the Supreme Court is a little? Doesn't really know how his college athletics is working these days.
It's a big business, Chief.
Yeah. And
right? And how it's going to flow down, when it's going to flow down, I mean, that's been asked for a long time. I don't know if the Supreme Court, obviously, the NCAA's had their way for a long time. I don't know if that's going to change things or make things any better.
Are you expecting Michigan football to be 100% fans?
Maybe. I think so. I think the trends, the way things have been going with the pandemic, is that, right? They're getting back to the games. Less a mask mandate, the less the variant rears its ugly face. I don't see why not.
Well, real quick, what's Detroit? The Cubs are 100% no mask. So what is what's the Tigers?
I think same thing.
Well, then Michigan football probably the same way. Joel, thank you very much, buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 37. Back, Mr. Kenny Polcari.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 5, the NASDAQ Futures up 39, except for a big, really across the board rally yesterday. I mean, it was about as strong as I've seen in a long time. I think every stock in the Dow, every stock in the transportation area, there were really no laggards. So I would say yesterday was, it might have been a relief rally or whatever it was, but whatever it was strong and across the board, and really, there was never any doubt yesterday that we were going to close pretty darn high. Kenny, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I understand you bought futures at Sunday night when they were down 20, and you're just let a few of them go right now. So you're up. What are you up? 85 points. It's not bad. Right. It's, I know it's I not your usual. You're not your usual haul, but 85 you'll take.
I let them rip up yesterday. Now we're right. I'm unloading them this morning.
Come on. Somebody's got to do it. I just hope it's you. Why not? I'd rather you do it than somebody else. You know?
Somebody does have to do it. I agree. And I think that whole, you know, we could talk about it a lot, but that whole action on Friday, I think is very, very orchestrated, right? I think that's, the Fed comes out and makes their announcement on Wednesday, and then they push out other members of the Fed, in this case, Jimmy Bullard, who's not a voting member, to out and kind of really test the balloon, push the envelope a little bit more to test the anxiety level of investors in the markets if the conversation changes a little bit, which is exactly what we saw on Friday. Right? Powell never said anything about 2022. Suddenly Bullard comes out with 2022 and sends everybody into a frenzy because the inputs and the equations hadn't really set themselves up for a 2022 movement rates. They were getting used to the idea that maybe mid-2023 was much more a reality, which is okay. I mean, it should be because I don't think rates will stay into zero till 2024 at all. And I've been saying it since they made that promise, you know, months ago. I'm saying that's a very aggressive promise to keep because so much can change over the course of 2 years. To tell everybody rates aren't going up till 2024, I thought was very aggressive. So, you know, they put Bullard out there now, who at least floats the idea of 2022, right? So now it's in play. It is, in fact, part of the conversation. So as we move forward and the economy gets hotter and blah, 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 and the Fed comes out and goes, you know, it's hotter than we thought, so we're going to move rates. So they're preparing investors once again that possibility is out there, which I think is okay to do because that's just the way they're going to do it, right? They keep kind of giving you plenty of time, plenty of runway, and you saw what happened. Initially, when they talked about moving rates in mid-2023, the markets went into a convulsion, too. And then last Wednesday, they didn't really react to that, right? It was no big deal. But then they mentioned 2022, and suddenly you get that violent reaction again. And then yesterday, for no reason, they rallied right back 550 points on the Dow as if nothing happened. But what really changed from Friday to Monday? Not a whole lot. There was no difference in the economic data. There was no difference in the fundamental data. So what changed? Absolutely nothing, other than the fact that Jay Powell then came out and published his comments for today and said nothing about 2022, continues to reiterate his story about inflation being transitory and the economy is, you know, making its way and blah, 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 and that the target might be late 2023. That's exactly what he does. And the algos, you know, go into this, they couldn't sell them fast enough on Friday. Well, they couldn't buy them fast enough yesterday.
Right. It's, my brother made an interesting comment yesterday, and that I said, you know, I still don't quite understand how, you know, I've managed to do halfway decent on my gold and silver stuff over time, but nothing like I thought I would, Kenny. I mean, my brother said, you know, it's astounding that we never believed it, but the extent of the manipulation of not only the Fed and the central banks, where they're obviously holding commodity prices down after what China did the other day, they didn't have much luck with soybeans and stuff because they were up to about $7.50 a bushel. They're not afraid to manipulate anything at this point to cover their tracks. I mean, we just blew through $8 trillion on the balance sheet. I mean, and he says there's no limit to this. But I just, Kenny, the two things that you and I talk about, because maybe we're closer to it than most, they have everybody convinced that if they screw up, they're talking about when they say taper or when they say raise rates, they're talking about still firmly in control, going from like 0.5% to maybe 2%, and that's the fix. And I think you and I know that if they lose control for a second, we're not talking about 2%, we're talking about 7%. I mean, once you're out of control, you're out of control. there's the definition
of... That's my fear, right?
Yeah, me too.
That's my fear, is that it's going to spin out of control, and they're going to find themselves behind the eight ball, and then we're going to go back right back to 1980 when rates shot up to, you know, inflation shot up, unemployment shot up, and then rates shot up to 20%+.
And I just, you know, I know Maddie says I talk about it too much, which he's probably right, but once it happens to you, Kenny, when I got my partner and I, Robin, we got a bridge loan and a condo for 8% because she was a big shot at Pullman Treasury, so we got this thing at Continental Bank instead of having to get a mortgage. In 7 months, we were paying 14%. So all that has to do is happen to you once, and you take all this stuff about the Fed's firmly in control and trust us. You take this with a serious grain of salt. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, it is a fair statement, but you see, and we've talked about this too, there's so many people that are in the, you know, financial community today that were not even born in 1980, have no recollection of what that was like, and they think guys like you and me are dinosaurs, or what are you talking about? It could never happen. Oh, my God, you guys are crazy. You're losing your mind, blah, blah, blah. Really, I'm losing my mind? Just go back and look, and you and I discussed it. My first mortgage was 15%.
Yeah. Well, right? I mean, we weren't alive when the atomic bomb was dropped, but we figured out that that's not a good idea.
Exactly, which is why I laugh when I get attacked on Twitter by saying, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about, how can I say that, but really, how can I say it? Just watch, because we're in a place now that no one's ever been, right, in terms of central banks around the world, and all this stuff. Look, it's taken us 12 years to get to this point. It's not going to be over in 3 months. It's going to take just as long to get out as long as they can control it. If they lose control, it's going to get ugly pretty damn fast. And that's my only fear.
Kenny, we talk about this one a little bit every week. So what do you make of, I'll tell you where I'm at. That's kind of if I have a game, that's a strong part of my game. And I was a index trader, so my focus has always been, you know, the market, because I traded OEX for 19 years. But I'm not as strong as I think you are. What is going on with the difference? I mean, now that I'm doing a lot of stuff for people and have been for a long time, I'm kind of amazed at the last year or two where the Russell will kick ass for a while on other guys, and then it doesn't do anything for a while, and then the Qs do real well, and then the, you know, the Spiders do better. And what is causing, I can't give you this question as a 2-minute answer, but this turmoil within the different sectors of the market. There's a lot of money to be made there. I just don't know how to play that. Do you? I mean, it.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, listen, I think you have to have a broader. I don't play some day to day, as you know. I'm much more like you, where I tend to be more long term focused. But certainly, the story is changing as we come out of this, as we come out of the, you know, the economic collapse we had last year. And so there's a big story in terms of what's going to happen to rates, what's going to happen to the dollar, what's going to happen. And so the different sectors will obviously take control, right, in that rising rate environment. We've seen how the Nasdaq is so outperformed. So it does make sense that you're going to see, and I'm big on this value trade over growth this year. I still think value is going to outperform growth. But I think that the market's too anxious right now in terms of it doesn't, from day to day, it doesn't know what's going to come out of somebody's mouth, and so therefore you can feel the anxiety in it, right? So I think as an investor, as a long-term investor, you have to play it kind of safe and be more balanced, right? I don't think you can at all outweigh any one sector over the other, because I think on day one, on Monday it's great, and on Tuesday it's horrible, right? So you're better off having a much more balanced portfolio until there's more clarity on monetary policy and rates and inflation, and that might be a while. Might be 6 months, might be 8 months before you really get clarity on it.
Well, I started doing some stuff for people outside, you know, my firm, like on a sub basis for, I did my protected program, and this was like 2-3 years ago, Kenny. And I had some guys, you know, some people wanted the Russell, some people wanted the Qs, yep. Some people wanted the Spiders, some people wanted an XLE. Well, the people I put in the XLE, I mean, man, it took everything I could do, every skill I had to be like anywhere near break even as the thing is getting plummeted, even with the puts and the calls. Same way in the Russell. And meanwhile, the Qs were chasing calls like we couldn't chase the calls fast enough, right? Qs going straight to the moon, and all of a sudden, like last June, it totally flips around. That if you weren't in the XLE. You weren't making any money, and then all of a sudden the Russell's up $5 a day when everything else is down. I'm going, I have no idea why this is happening. I mean, a little bit you get an idea, but I mean, it was pretty stark. Where some days the Qs would be up and the Russell's down. I don't. If you're in the OEX, you just assume everything moves the same way, but it's not. Or I mean, it's kind of crazy. I'm go ahead.
Well, it's crazy now because I think we're in this place that we've never been before, right? In terms of central bank stimulus and central bank policy, and even government policies, right, supporting and pumping money into the system. And so I think this is kind of a new paradigm for a lot of people, and that's why you're going to continue to have this, you know, these moves that you see where there's this disconnect. You know, today it's the Russell, tomorrow's growth, the next day it's value, the next day it's the cyclical trade. So that's why I think you have to, from a long-term perspective, you have to be more balanced.
Kenny, thank you very much, buddy. Take care of yourself. Stay away from these tornadoes. Stay away from these tornadoes. They're not good.
I'm in New York this week, so actually I'm not anywhere near the tornado.
That would be interesting to have a tornado in New York.
Goodbye.
Yeah, that would not be good. SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 35. Back, Mr. Mike Hart.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, Give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us from Tasty Trade. SP Futures up 6. NASDAQ Futures up 38. Mike, how are you?
Hey, doing great, Chief. How you doing this morning?
I'm doing all right, and I just, it astounds me some of the things that listeners send me, because it really is, I don't know where I'd find this stuff if all of a sudden I stopped doing the show. I mean, it's astounding the thing that, the little facts that are out there, and I don't know if you...
Oh, yeah, always impressive.
And I hear, you know, everybody knows I went to Notre Dame, right? So, good and bad. The amount of stuff people start talking when they keep suing these for-profit colleges. You know, weren't they given, didn't they just give some money back on the federal side, Maddie, for... they got rid of the student loans at ITT or something, where the guys they didn't get what they were promised or some story about that. Explain to me, Mike, again, before we get into the story about the VIX today, because boy, it's a good one. I think, what the hell difference does it make whether it's a profit school or a regular school? I mean, if the price is the same, matter of fact, the regular school charges more. There's no job guarantee there. This whole idea for the reason why I ask this is because one of our man, Paul, says, now the Packers, the Green Bay Packers, you probably know this, being from the Midwest, they are actually owned by a charity, correct? They used to be, Manny, wasn't it the originally was the, what's the Italian one? Italian charity, the, Christ, slipping my feeble brain, Knights of Columbus. They were owned by the Knights of Columbus, right? And then they became Green Bay Packers Charity is in, 1986.
I remember this. Yeah, I remember hearing about this.
Well, and the foundation has distributed $14.4 million for charitable purposes since it was established in 1986. So the Green Bay Packers, the revenue last year was $485 million. So tell me the difference between a not-for-profit and a for-profit. I mean...
Well, you'd think it has something to do with the profits, but obviously I'm not seeing that there. I believe it's a legal term, but that's the extent of my knowledge.
Yeah, I mean, what's really the difference between the University of Notre Dame, that, you know, the religious affiliation, and Commonwealth Edison? The Commonwealth Edison doesn't care about their shareholders and return them God knows what. They suck it all up internally, just like these universities do. Right, I mean, what's the difference, whether it's for profit or not?
That's a fair point.
Anyway, as the same guy sends me another one that says, which, as we talk about the NCAA, worried about how much kids get paid during the summer, basically, and he says Yale's endowment, its 20-year market return is 9.9%. Thus, income from Yale each year is approximately $3 billion. Is it what? I got a $30 billion endowment. Is that big? Imagine what quality athletes that Yale could buy each year with $3 billion. They should be able to beat Alabama each year if it was spent on football. What do you think, Manny? Could they have a good enough team to beat Alabama if they ponied up $3 billion? I mean, you look at, it's always amazing when you read what people want you to hear, Mike, and then all of a sudden somebody digs between the lines and says, these are the real numbers. You look at it and go, wait a minute. But that's sure a lot different than what I'm being. So what do you make of yesterday's snapback rally? And I got one of the guys I do business for calls me and says, that he was talking to all his clients and everybody, you know, was complaining they weren't in this, they weren't in that. And he goes right, and he threw some numbers at me, the S&P and a bunch of these others. We're like at the exact same spot we were 3 or 4 weeks ago or a month ago. Be up and down all over the place, and all of a sudden we're right where we were. I mean, have you ever seen...
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say that the amount of violent moves within a fairly sizable range, I don't think I've ever seen.
No, I don't think I've ever seen it either. This is really unique movement that we're seeing. We're seeing 2-point changes in the VIX back-to-back is rare, and especially to have opposite movements is especially rare in the market. To have a large down move followed by nearly the exactly same up move is a very rare occurrence, and quite frankly, I don't think many people were expecting that type of movement, because you could see how quickly the VIX began changing and volatility started coming out the moment we started going higher. I think there was a lot of sentiment that we might see lower prices from the lows that we saw on Friday. That just wasn't the case on Monday.
Well, I was, after the, especially the Dow, I mean, after the last week, I mean, we were discussing Friday night, fuel was stopped, and I mean, I was like, hey, is Monday going to be like a black Monday? I mean, it looked pretty bad. You know? And I look Friday night, and spoo's around 20, and I'm going, last thing we need is like a crash tomorrow. I mean, we don't need that. I hope this thing firms up some. Not only firmed up, it was like it never happened. I sure as hell wasn't hoping for a crash, but I don't know where really the Friday sell-off came from, but I have no idea where the rally yesterday came from either. I mean, I'm clueless on both sides here.
I'm a little clueless too. I think it feels a little late to be having the inflation conversation, but that seemed to be a national conversation last week, was inflation and hyperinflation and the possibility of it. Again, to me, I feel like the conversation to have that was months and months ago, and it feels a little late to be having that conversation, but better late than never. I thought that might be the catalyst to drive this, and obviously, at least from what we saw yesterday and what we're seeing a little bit of today, is the market just kind of brushed it off and decided to just keep going higher.
Well, as everybody I think knows, I am a little bit disappointed in how, with the inflation stuff, you and I have been sort of borne out to be right, but we still don't see it hitting the precious metals. It hit some of the other rest of the commodities. I mean, even before anybody talked about it, when corn goes from $3 to $7.50 a bushel, that should be big news. It was quiet. Nobody even talked about it. That or soybeans or anything. And as my brother's been saying, he thinks that that there's been some manipulation in the commodity markets. But I was absolutely stunned. It was a Thursday when China came out and said this stuff's getting too high. We're selling stuff out of our hordes of soybeans and gold and whatever else they were selling. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen you ever seen a central government do that before? I haven't. I mean, oil, yeah. I mean, if we got real high, they'll threaten letting some out of the reserve, which is such BS anyway. I don't think there's no pipeline from the reserve to any refinery, is there? I don't think. I mean, it's the most screwed up system
going.
I don't
think so.
So, I mean, without getting into the intricacies of the reserve, the strategic oil reserve, and whether you could actually use the damn stuff, I mean, it's self-threatened, and all of a sudden, oil drop. That's like probably the only time that I've really known of a lot of manipulation on a specific commodity. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of the market saying, gee, soybeans are too high. We just happen to have, 15 warehouses of soybeans we're going to dump on the market. I've never heard that of you.
Well, that's the first time I've ever heard anything like that, especially you wouldn't expect it coming from the corn market, but it sure did from what it sounds like. I didn't even hear about this, Chief.
Well, this was all China.
To be completely honest.
Well, they've been beating up on the Bitcoin, and I think they let aluminum, copper... They didn't mention gold, but somebody's leaning on gold. They said they were going to sell it out of their stores, and that was why all that stuff was down. I mean, gold was down $80 while interest rates were down. Which is
right.
Which is like, how does that happen? It's just kind of strange stuff. But It's almost like you better hedge yourself like every night, because who knows what the next morning is going to bring.
Exactly. You know, it feels like these traditional hedges aren't working as well as we'd like them to, especially when you look at the precious metals. Those have been, unfortunately, very quiet during this period of time where we are seeing, a little bit more volatility. We'd expect to see it translate over into the gold market, you know, sort of have that inverse correlation to inflation, and we're simply not seeing it. Gold sat relatively still on Friday, all things compared. There really wasn't much of a high correlation of movement. It was, it seemed to be doing its own thing, and it was independent of what market moves were, which is not the traditional move we'd expect.
Well, you're right, and I think what we've kind of seen, which is a lot of people do this. I mean, I don't know if you guys do, but in general, a lot of times people have, say, a whole bunch of what they think are their best, say, high-tech stocks. Okay, and they'll say, all right, well, we just want to get some general hedge on this in case, you know, the whole world goes to hell, which you hope doesn't. But so we're going to buy some puts, say, in the Qs, which is the NASDAQ 100.
Sure.
We're going to hedge this general area. And for many years, that sort of worked out, that if you bought if you bought the Amazons of the world, the Googles of the world, and you basically got, you know, some QQQ puts, if the few times we've had somewhat of a robust correction, you know, 5 to 8%, which has happened a few times over the last several years, you did real well on those puts, and your stocks didn't go down as much as the market. I mean, so your puts reacted to an 8% move in the market, and your stocks were only down 3 or 4. So you ended up, you know, the idea that if you had the strong stocks with like a general put protection worked out pretty well for you. But now in the last year, I'm going to say that strategy, that's gone upside down too, though, Mike. It seems to me, because I know the people who are doing
really?
It. You know, but just let's put it this way: it didn't have to. It worked so much better than expected for so long that people kind of got the idea that that's. And one of the biggest, you know, I do stuff for different people who have different strategies, and I just do my stuff for them. But you'll see people that on one of the groups that I deal with, their biggest single holding is Apple. Well, okay, if you had puts in the QQQ in the last year, you didn't make any money in those puts. QQQ's in the same spot, yet Apple's down, what, 20%? You know, so, I mean...
Totally true, yeah.
So you're starting to get... When I you know, basically talk back and forth about how hard it is, you know, to pick whether this is going to be a Russell week or even if we're up. I haven't seen a week or a month in a long time where it didn't matter whether you're in the Spider, the Russell, the Qs, or XLE, they all were up 2%. I mean, every week there's one of them there that was a clunker that was down when the others were up. And God help you.
That's a good point, yeah.
You know, God help you, you got a client who calls up and says, hey, the S&P's up 5% last week, and how come I'm up nothing? You know, and they, well, you're not in the S&P. You wanted to be in the Qs. Yeah, well, but the S&P, you know, that kind of thing. So, I mean, it really, you know, when these guys talk about, you know, sector trading, I don't think ever, right now, it's more important than I can sort of ever remember. And I'm not so sure, anybody can do that. No, we're going to be up this week, but not the Spider. You know, I mean, it's like, wait a minute, what are you talking about? But that's kind of what's been happening.
Right. You know, so traditionally, this wouldn't really be a thing, because traditionally the correlation is so high between them. I'm talking like a 0.96 relationship, and the scale can only go to 1. So that gives you an idea of how strong the relationship is. But my guess is, if you ran the numbers this year, which I haven't, it'd be much lower than the traditional average. Hence, like, there's less correlation, less movement together is what that means. And with less together movement, you have the situation where yeah, one could be up 5%, the other could be unchanged on the week. And that just really wasn't the case like a year or 2 years ago. You saw a lot more movement together, as opposed to movement apart. It was very positively correlated before.
I mean, it's a, of course, there's always going to be a customer who says, you know, this one's up 5% and I'm only up 1. I said, yeah, but you're not in that one and you didn't want to be in that one. Yeah, but that's the one that's up. Okay. I mean, fortunately, those kinds of people are rare, but they are there. You know, it's like, hey, you know, this Dodge you sold me isn't lasting as long as the Chevy. Yeah, but you didn't want a Chevy. Yeah, I know, but okay. Are you seeing, when you go back, you look at all these, the numbers, you know, more than I do now. Have there been times where this time is like, for me, it's just my recollection, okay, that I haven't seen a time quite like this between the different sector rotations, between the commodity stuff. One day there's a correlation between interest rates and gold, the next day there isn't. I mean, I don't know if I've, when we started, I mean, when bonds were up, the market was up. There were no spoos to look at. You looked at the bonds. They were the only things that were trading. And if all of a sudden, because interest rates were high, so when interest rates were going down, it was good for stocks. So if bonds came flying up, it meant that interest rates were going down, and it was good for stocks any other way. So there was this fairly significant correlation, like, all over the place. I mean, there were no indexes, and you could, you know, if you wanted to trade the market that second, you traded IBM or you traded maybe General Motors, but IBM was kind of the bellwether. But once in a great while, you'd have the market, you know, up 0.5% and IBM would be down on the day. But it was pretty darn rare because those were the stocks that were driving things. And now it seems like that's kind of happening. It seems like it's happening more often, but I guess I don't have the numbers to really tell me if I'm right or not. I mean, what are you seeing?
Well, it's something, I haven't looked at those numbers specifically. It's something I can check out and we can talk about next week, because it does feel that way, Chief. It feels that way to me, too. This is an unusual time. And I think, you know, you can break it down to the uncertainty that's out there. There's just a lot of uncertainty. I mean, if you see the market down 60 points one day and up 60 points the next day, that just goes to show the amount of uncertainty and the amount of kind of guessing that's going into what's going to happen. And it seems like a very easily opinion changed market. Like Friday, it felt like nothing was ticking up. Monday, it felt like nothing was going to tick down. It does feel like the opinions change much faster. And I think that could be attributed to just the general high level of VIX. I mean, VIX is at 17.5 or 17.41 right now. And we would say that's pretty low relative to the last year,
year and a half.
But it's just a little bit low, right? But all things considered, we're well above that historical average that we normally see in the VIX. Of call it 15.5, and we've been trading above there for the most part for a year and a half now. We've been above that average level, so we've been on the higher side of VIX, which can be thought of as the uncertainty valve or the uncertainty level, and that's on the high side. So I'm not surprised to see certain pockets of the economy not performing the way you might expect.
Well, are you sensing any difference in how the volatility skew is setting up? Because I mean, we've talked before that the only time I ever, well, on the security side, you generally will get a volatility skew where the volatility goes up by strike to the downside, because people are afraid of the downside, because if all of a sudden the market starts to collapse, there's really not a whole lot of natural put sellers. So if you want to have, you know, your units in place, you better have them before it happens. So people will go and they'll pay up for the out of the money puts just so they have, I'll call them Armageddon puts, right? And and nobody's really willing to sell you, you know. I mean, the spiders are 421. I mean, there aren't really a whole lot of people right now that are willing to sell you, you know, thousands of the 350 puts, you know, at 2 cents like they might have used to be. Because you sit there, you're never going to get to 350. Well, now, you know, you might. So people, they want to own those because they can, so they can sell the 380s, right, and have something behind them in case everything falls apart. And the only time I ever really, and a lot of people never would believe me, that the only time I ever saw the skew like that happen to the upside was in commodities, because they're a different drill. I mean, you could have a flood that sends soybeans to $25. They're not going to go to zero because they have use for somebody somewhere. At $4, the whole world's be buying soybeans.
Exactly.
So the skew's the other way. But now, for the first time I've ever seen in the security side, all these, what do you call them? Do you call them the meme stocks? I don't even know what that even means. But AMC. What was the first one? It was the crazy one that was
GME.
Yeah, GME, BB, all those stocks. If you looked at those, they all skewed sort of to the upside. I mean, not sort of, seriously to the upside, to where if you were willing to sell the highest call, you might have been getting a 450 volatility, where less than that, you might have been getting a 350 because everybody wanted to own that last one because you had to have units. But are you starting to see? That hasn't happened yet with the regular market, but it seems to me they're starting to even out a little bit. You don't get on a rally day the VIX going down to 12. I mean, it seems like we're not skewing to the upside yet, but we're getting closer to where when we're down, people think that we could actually have a 3% move to the upside in 2 days, which is not anything. And the idea was, to use a trading curve, you took the escalator up and the elevator down, right? Was always the.
That's always the saying, yeah.
But now I'm not so sure that saying is as strong as it used to be. Is that a fair?
That's a fair assumption, and that's a fair thing to say. When you look at the sell-off that we had in March of 2020, that was you could say that was actually stronger than the sell-off in 2008. It had all the characteristics of changing a bull market into a bear market. And here's the difference from 2008. 2008 took maybe, I don't know, Chief, I can't really remember, maybe a year and a half to recover from 2008 to get back to levels that we were at prior to the sell-off. It took about less than 45 days for the March 2020 to be completely erased and the market to be back on track. So it was the shortest lived sell-off that we can honestly say we've seen for such a large, massive move to the downside.
Amazing what?
So yes.
Amazing what? How many billion dollars will do for you?
It is. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You wonder why this inflation deal is just becoming a thing to talk about.
My
opinion was this should have been something to talk about a year ago.
February.
And it's just amazing how slow it took.
February 24th, 2020, which is right before COVID. Even with the Fed, with all the antics of still doing stuff from 2008, was the Fed balance sheet was $4.1 trillion. Now it's 8.1.
Wow.
So we're talking about in 15 months, $4 trillion. That'll drive any market up. Just saying.
That's true.
So between
when you put it like that, it's amazing that we've doubled.
Between February 24th, just happen to have this chart up. February 24th, the Fed balance sheet was $4.1 trillion and May 25th, it was 7.09, so roughly $3 trillion in 2 months, 2.5 months. That'll cause a recovery.
That's true. I mean, that's a good way to put it. And it most certainly did. When you look at the charts and you look at the sell-off, it's the shortest-lived sell-off that we've seen. Like I said, 2008 took a year and a half, 2 years to recover back to the prices that we had seen previously. This took 42 days or something like that.
What did the 1972 took a decade? Something like that?
Sounds about right. I didn't actually test the 1972, but that sounds about right just by the look of the charts.
Yeah, we bounced the Dow was almost, I don't think it quite got there, but almost got to 1,000 in like 1968. And it messed around back and forth with that number, but was down to 800 when Reagan was in August. I was trading Reagan. We were back down to 800, so it was down 20% 14 years later, you know, before it started to go up. I don't think we're ready. I don't think we're ready for that again, do you? That would be a long time.
No, I don't think that would be quite bad, to say the least, on this kind of.
Yeah, can you imagine if we had a 20-25% correction and we didn't get back to these levels until 2035? God, I mean, it could happen. I mean, we've had 2 decades since I've traded, 2 decades where we didn't go anywhere. 1997, 2007, we were unchanged.
I mean,
I'm not 22, but I'm not that old either. I mean, if there's been 2 decades like that since I've been trading, it sure can happen, right? You don't want it to, but it's not like, you know, we couldn't, the Q's are at, where the hell are they? The Q's are at 344. I mean, it's not like it's impossible that we could be 2032 and then be 344. Right?
Absolutely. It's definitely not impossible. In fact, I'm sure we could figure out the odds if we had option chains that went out that far. Of course, we don't, but it'd be interesting to see what the market predicts as far as that goes.
Well, you see what you take a historical picture of time. We had an interesting one this week. Matty was talking about it the other day because he knows way more about it than me. But the Bears are threatening to move to. They're putting a bid in Arlington Heights. They're not really threatening anything yet, although that's sort of a threat. And it's what, 2032, Manny? 2030, when is it? Where are they?
They're under lease at Soldier Field through 2033.
All right, so that could be 3 mayors from now. I mean, it's kind of early to start that fight. I mean, who knows? Where the National Football League could be closed with everybody having this brain disease, and we could be 4 mayors from now. I mean, do we really need to fight that one now? With all the other stuff we got going? I mean, you're like, what are you guys even doing? But anyway, are we break time here, Manny? I think we are. SP Futures up 5. NASDAQ Futures up 23. We'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ollie. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us, as we do usually on Tuesday or Wednesday, but we get our big fix on what's the internals of the market, which are so fascinating, and Mike really brings me up to speed on this stuff because I don't really have the time to look at it. But the volatility and the changes and the stuff, this is history in the making, and this is real stuff. We can see what the Dow futures are because I've been watching Bitcoin here as it's getting clobbered this morning. Dow's up 50, but Bitcoin ducked under 30,000, so it's down $2,200 right now. So in Europe, we've got up 27 on the DAX, 0.1%. FTSE up 26.4%, CAC round up 8.1%, right about where it was an hour ago. Asia, Nikkei up 873, that's 3%, that's almost exact. Actually, it didn't come all the way back from where they were yesterday. They were down almost 4% yesterday, and it came back 3%. So I guess that's a Fibonacci plus retracement. Whatever that is. Shanghai up 28.8%. Hang Seng, however, down 179.6%, just to be different. Yesterday, as a way of review, a huge rally. Dow up 586. S&P up 58. That was after being down 20 the night before, so that was almost an 80-point swing. NASDAQ up 111. They were kind of the laggard at only 0.8%. Bonds up 1 basis point, 1.495. The Bund, these guys have actually come back from like 29, minus 29 to minus 17, so they've advanced reasonably steady the last 3 or 4 days. Who knows? Maybe they will get back to zero. Japan, positive 0.05. Oil, down 45 cents, 73.21. Brent down 22 cents, 74.68. Natural gas up 4 cents, 3.23. Again, well, that's high. I mean, we have inflation, but still, that's high for June. RBOB, unchanged at 2.20. We've got gold now is down 4.80, 17.78. These guys had a pretty good rally yesterday, but still, way below the 1890 they were for a while. Silver down a dime, 25.92. Copper up a penny, 4.19. And crypto is kind of the news story this morning. I read the Bitcoin just went back over 30,000, but it was 29,923 a few minutes ago. It's down $2,500. That's 8%. So we're getting whack on those guys. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We still have the Dan Ryan Express lanes on the outbound side closed due to an earlier fatal crash that happened this morning, and that investigation continues, so traffic is forced into the locals to avoid the express lanes there throughout that investigation, and that's affecting the Dan Ryan. No issues on I-57 or the Bishop Ford. We do have a crash down south. It looks like southwest suburbs, I-80 eastbound, right at I-355. That crash has been moved to the right shoulder. That's affecting both 80 and the I-355 exit there onto the Veterans Memorial. Traffic building steadily on the Stevenson, but no accidents to report. Same for the Eisenhower. We do have an issue on the Tri-State. This is on the northbound side before Grand Avenue. Disabled vehicle blocking the right lane, and that's causing heavy traffic on I-294 because there's been a couple of issues this morning. That's just the latest. Edens looks okay. Traffic building heavily on the Kennedy, but no accidents to report. Off the expressways, there's a crash on North Avenue, which is Route 64 in Forest Park. between 5th and 9th Avenue, and that has North Avenue closed right now on the westbound side due to that crash. And then northwest of there, York Road at Supreme Drive, there is an accident. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, beautiful weather day. Sunshine, mild temperatures, a high of 75. Right now it's clear and 57 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 107. Right now it's clear and 88. In sports, Cubs were shut out last night at Wrigley, losing to the Indians 4-0. White Sox were off there at Pittsburgh tonight to take on the Pirates. That's a 6:05 Central Time first pitch. Diamondbacks snapped their 17-game losing streak. They beat the Brewers 5-1. NBA basketball for our Phoenix listeners. Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals tonight. Suns hosting the Clippers. It's a 6:05 Arizona time tip-off. And Chris Paul will remain out as he is still in COVID protocol. Cheap.
I'm looking at some of these ratios on some of these companies, but I have a question for Mike, because you like to delve yourself into the statistics and the numbers, and a lot of them, I won't say they don't lie. They can be interpreted to where you lie using them, correct? I mean, it's a
correct. That's the nature of statistics.
but who would have thought? I mean, I got to say something nice about Jeff when he's not here, because I can't do it when he's here. Who would have thought that you would have had something like a Luck Box magazine, which essentially is put out by a bunch of people that are traders, right? And we're not. He doesn't have 15 people that were journalism majors at Northwestern on staff or anything like that. I mean, he might have a couple. I mean, I don't know that much, but I mean, I don't. It takes somebody. You would think that kind of research he's been doing on some of the companies or the countries and the stuff that is real serious stuff about China. He's going to have some stuff coming out, like on the markets and things, and the Fed. I mean, all kinds of stuff. You wouldn't think that you would expect a guy like Jeff, you know, to sort of come up with that. I mean, not that he's not smart enough. He sure as hell is. But I mean, you wouldn't think people would have to listen basically to you and me to get what's underneath the market. It seems like there's this story that is out there on virtually every level of what you're supposed to believe. It's like doublespeak or something. And it really is something. It really is something that, I mean, I look at the Luck Box stuff and the research being done there. And again, I can't say this in front of Jeff because you don't want to be a big head. You wouldn't expect it coming from, I'll use the term us, people in our industry. I mean, that's not our job. I mean, right? I mean, and you would think that you know, financial truth, it would just be there. I mean, it would be the U.S. News. It would be the Time Magazine of 40 years ago. And somehow it's not, Mike. I mean, there's all kinds of there. I'm looking at somebody's stocks here this morning, and I never give stock advice or anything like that, but I'm looking at somebody's stocks like Snow, and I'm looking at Show, I'm looking at Zoom, and these things are in, I mean, that doesn't mean that they're not a buy today. Don't get me wrong, but you look at somebody's ratios, it's like, and they had the same question on one of the I'll use the term buffoons on TV, and I don't understand, Mike, because I'm. Everybody knows I got more registrations than I need to have, right? I can't talk, shouldn't talk about anything like that, where this company is lousy, this is it. I'm not talking about, I can give the ratios, and I can talk, I'm never going to tell anybody whether they should buy or sell it, or whether it shouldn't be a buy this week, even though I think they're ahead of their skis. But so they asked some guy basically that same question, and he launched into this huge diatribe about if you would have looked at Amazon 20 years ago or 15 years ago, how horrible their numbers would have looked, and what a dumbo you would have been to dump Amazon because the numbers look lousy. Look what happened to them now. And if you and I were sitting next to him, I'm just going to say, we would say, yes, nobody would ever debate that, you know, the Snow of the world or the Zoom of the world isn't going to grow into those numbers and be the best investment on earth. What we're saying is, if there's 30 companies that are like that, you might have 3 or 4 or 5, or that might be generous, big-time winners, and the rest nobody will even remember because they're gone. Because not everybody makes it from, you know, 80 or 100 times revenue into where it's a real company. I mean, how do you just talk about one place and what a deal, without mentioning to people, well, what about all the rest of the places in 1999? Where are they now? I mean, they're nowhere.
That's a good point.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, so I mean, I, when you look at the numbers, they like what you talk about with your VIX, you're not trying to tell somebody, hey, the VIX is here, therefore you should sell all the calls and puts. You're never going to say that. A, you wouldn't anyway, and B, you probably can't, right? So, I mean, in turn, but yet these guys seem to have as many numbers after their name as you and I. They're saying all this stuff. I don't get that, where the enforcement is. But also, you say it like it is. The VIX is here. It's unusual. It could mean this, it could mean that. But at least know that an 18 VIX after a 500-point rally is still a pretty high number. But you're not...
Right.
I mean, how does this truth just seem to not be anywhere these days?
It doesn't match the Wall Street storyline. The Wall Street storyline is just that, more of a story, less of the actual facts. And I call facts those rooted in statistics. And I, in fact, like the stats more than like a, call it a, you know, a technical analysis. Rather than technical analysis, I'd rather look at the stats of how a strategy performed over the past 20 years, whereas I can just look at a chart and I know how the stock has performed, but I don't know, looking at a chart, how the Iron Condor has performed. So by running these types of analysis, it gives me an idea of real, actual, usable, tradable information. And I think that's why it had to come out from traders. I think this type of information could only come from traders because it's the type of information that we actually trade off of and we will make decisions off of. And it's not the typical stuff. Just your example of using Amazon and saying, you know, hey, it was trading for a few hundred dollars back in 1990 and the numbers were ridiculous. That's not useful. That's, first of all, that's Monday morning quarterbacking, in the sense that you're talking about something that's a move that's already happened and you're saying, well, see, this one would have worked out. But what we're trying to propose is information that's actually usable and relevant to today's market. And those are the type of statistics that we like to research.
And what are they, if you were to pick one or two right now that are standing out, because you mentioned that this unusual, that's unusual, what are the ones that are most unusual to you right now? And do they tell you anything about trading, or they're just there, unusual?
Well, I mean, right now what we know is unusual is what I mentioned earlier, that the VIX typically doesn't trade this high. In fact, this is a rare thing, and it probably has never happened, at least based on our data. We couldn't find a period of time where the VIX has ever been this high for this extended period of time. So the fact that volatility is so high, you can think of volatility as the fear gauge of the market, and how scared are investors? Well, for the past year and a half, investors have been more scared than they really have ever been about a market, and that fear continues today. I find that very interesting. What does that do to option prices? That raises across the board the price of the option. So whether you're buying or selling, just know that the prices of the options are higher than they traditionally are, and that's due to the VIX. It's a direct correlation. So kind of tying all the pieces together is part of that process of using the statistics to your advantage.
Well, it should mean that it's a great covered writer's market, yet covered writing has been very difficult.
That's right. And it's been lucrative in the sense that things have been going higher. It's been frustrating for some who do the cover writes, because they could make quite a bit more had they not done it in the first place. Is that what you're seeing, Chief?
Well, it depends on that depends on the client. I mean, you can buy a covered right. First of all, I mean, it's a strategy that is how can I say it? It's a false strategy to start with. How's that for a term? Because if you were to ask a group of people, Mike, and you know what I'm talking about, if you were to say, what is the safest option strategy for people, you're going to get 98 hands go up out of 100, and they're going to say the covered right. Correct?
That's right. Yeah.
And if you were to say, what's the worst strategy for people, 98 hands are going to go up, and they're going to say it's a naked put. Okay? And I'm going to say it's the exact same strategy. Right? It's the same graph.
It's the same graph, yeah. Synthetically, they're the same.
Yeah.
We call that synthetic because you could do the exact same thing and produce the exact same results.
The difference is in perception. When you do a covered right for someone, they may have owned the stock previously, could own it for two generations, right? So they've already made the risk decision that I want to own, you know, whatever, UPS stock, like forever. Okay, so I've got it. I'm going to try and sneak a little extra money out of it by selling the covered right. All right, I'm going to sell options against my stock,
okay,
which is covered,
yep,
right. So you've already made the risk decision. So if UPS goes from 202.98 where it is right now down to 100, that's a decision that was made separate to you as the broker, or so then people aren't going to. But if you sell the 200 puts and the thing goes down to 100 and you're out $100, generally that's a risk you just took last week, you know, so it's a difference in time horizon on the risk. But also the same token is, if the person owns UPS at 202.98 and sells the 210 put, even if you get the head bobbing up and down, that you don't mind it going to 210, do you? Oh no, I'd love to sell it at 210. Well, if it's at 220, that story changes. Hey, the stock's at 220. We're down $10. So a covered right can be actually a very difficult type of a strategy because of the people involved and because of the different time horizons, right? I mean, it's very complicated because customers are complicated, right? If somebody handed you if somebody handed you a portfolio from the teachers fund or something, and said, we want to do covered rights, and you and I did covered rights, there's nobody there with an attachment to any given stock. So if you and I were to sell the 210 calls in UPS, and all of a sudden a week from now the thing gets called away, all they're going to see is, hey, we're up $8 on the stock, and by the way, we made $2 on the call. That was a good week. But that's not the way an individual person who has UPS his whole life is going to look at it. You know, it's really still my stock. Well, no, it's not. You know, so the debate just changes. So that's what's so complicated about this, Mike, and you know this. It's all about, chemotherapy is probably good for a lot of people. If you walk in with a hangnail, it's probably not what you give somebody, right? I mean, it's about matching strategies up to the people, right?
That's true. And understanding the cover right is just as important as executing it. You need to understand what it is the cover right's doing. Now, we classify it as a bullish strategy. You do want the underlying to go up because we always say, well, what's the maximum you can make on this strategy? And the maximum is achieved and bottom line is, if the stock price goes higher, we can achieve the maximum amount of profit on a cover right. So it is a bullish strategy, but if you're in love with your stock, if you're the type of person that you just want to hold on to UPS long term and you don't want to sell it, well, the cover right by its very nature says if it goes past this point, you're willing to sell the stock, then the cover right isn't a strategy that matches what you're looking for. You're right. It's actually the opposite because, in a sense, if you're extremely bullish on UPS and you think it could have a $20 week, then maybe you shouldn't do the cover right in the first place. Maybe the strategy is something else but not that.
Well, it comes down to, who is your client? And again, if people don't tell you, you don't know. Plus, people have weird personalities. I mean, my grandfather was a Boilermaker, right? And he's been dead since 1968, but he's the one who got me hooked into stocks. And, you know, he would say, I bought this stock at, you know, whatever, at $8, and I sold it at 10. And I'd say, well, gee, Gramps, it's trading 11, being the dumbo I was in those days. And he'd say, so what? Don't be afraid to leave a little something for the next guy. I bought it at 8. It was a good buy at 10. I wouldn't have bought it there. And so I sold it. I made $2. I'm happy. But now that mentality has totally changed. If it's trading 11, you screwed me for
that's
a buck.
True, yeah.
So that's my buck, and now I don't have it. I mean, and I think it's going to cause, if we ever do have a major correction, it's going to cause a lot of people to lose a lot of money. I mean, I don't know how when you talk to a client, Mike, I always say, somebody has, you know, a $2 million account, and they've got $1.9 million in, you know, pick a stock, Exxon or something, something that's an old line stock, and you'd say, well, you don't try and answer questions for people. You ask them. Say, well, if I gave you $2 million,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, if I gave you $2 million today, would the first thing you would do be you'd rush out of this office or give me an order to buy $1.9 million of Exxon? Instantly. And the answer inevitably is no. So you say, well, but that's what you got.
That's correct. Yeah.
So, but that's what you got. Well, yeah, but it's, my dad left it to me. Well, does your dad still work there? Well, no, my dad's been dead for 15 years. Well, do you think he cares? Well, I don't do a tongue in cheek like that, because obviously the guy, you know, everybody loves their dad and a whole bit, but how is that a trading position? You know, your dad used to work there. Well, I mean, if you wouldn't buy it that much today, we now have what they call, you and I know, in the trade, it's a concentration issue. I mean, how do we deal with it? Do we protect it? Do we lighten up on it? Do we spread some? Do we sell some? Well, then you get in the tax debate. Oh God, if I sell it, and then I got to pay taxes. I mean, if you had a dime for every time somebody didn't make the proper trade because of tax reasons, how rich would you be? I mean,
that's a common concern.
So I mean, it's all these strategies that you and I bandy about. There's nothing wrong. Every strategy you and I are capable of saying, well, if this happens, it's a great strategy. If this happens, not so much. But trying to match them up, like how many times have you talked and had people say, what's the best option strategy? And you go, there is no best. There is no worst. There's just ones that work, ones that are appropriate, and ones that happen to work out that particular time.
Well, what it comes down to is risk and reward. The balance of risk and reward is extremely fair in the options market. Hey, look, if you don't like it, if you don't want to be long it, you can sell it. It's a buyer's and seller's market, and often the spread is a penny wide, maybe up to 20 cents wide, but it's liquid. It's super liquid, and it's efficient. So everything is based on this idea of risk and reward and the balance of it. And if you want higher probability of success, you're going to have to give that up somehow. And that's going to be higher probability of success always means less potential profit on the trade. So if your probability of success is, say, 97%, you're not going to get a high amount of profits for that call or put that you decide to put on.
Mike, shifting gear on you a hair, only because I keep watching this Bitcoin basically going to crap hole here. What if any, without leading the witness, because I was last night I had a adult beverage with somebody who was happy he sold his, is it Logecoin? Is that the stuff as many?
Dogecoin.
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 He sold his at 70 cents, and last night it was trading 17 or something. What, if any, risk do you think the market has if these things collapse? I heard, and I don't know, that's why I'm asking you, because you know way more about this than me, and Maddie does too. Maddie, didn't we hear $1.5 trillion was the total value of all these things, like last week or the week before? Is that the number? Something like that there was over?
I have no idea. Mike might know.
If you total up all the Bitcoin, all this other stuff, I think it was over $1 trillion. I don't know, Mike, but confirm that if you can. And also, what if it's half a trillion?
I heard a number like that. I actually have heard a number like that, but I've never done the math on it, so I can't say for certainty.
Well, if somebody, I always lead to another question. If somebody mines a new Bitcoin tomorrow, there's just one more in the mix? Is that what happens? I mean, I guess.
That's right. But the fact of the matter is, as you get more Bitcoins, the math equation that allows you to mine more Bitcoins becomes a little bit harder, and it takes a little bit more time to mine a Bitcoin. So the more Bitcoins that are produced, the harder it is to produce the next Bitcoin. So if a Bitcoin is produced tomorrow, it just goes into the mix and it becomes, negative value by adding more coins to the mix. But so such a small amount is being added by mining right now that it's not having a significant impact. In fact, we saw for the longest time Bitcoin just moving higher.
Well, right this morning we've got it down 8%. 30 seconds you got to give me on this one, Mike. We're down 8% and the market's dropped 6 spoo points. If this thing drops 30%, are we going to be down 10 spoos or 200 spoos?
Right. Well, from my research, we haven't seen a high correlation between the two all year.
Okay.
Meaning Bitcoin does its thing and the market does their thing.
Okay, fair. We got a dash by
correlation seems inaccurate.
All right, thank you for that. Good answer. SP futures, like I said, down 1.25, NASDAQ down 2.25, kind of corresponding to this Bitcoin getting collapsed in here. Again, no, we don't know if it's a cause and effect, but we're corresponding. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.